Chapter 43. Sandstorm. The clay flats give way to sand, our tracks slowly swept away by a seemingly endless wind that blows the grit into great mounds that stretch out over the horizon. The silk veil filters out most of the particles, but not their taste. My mouth is pasty with it. The wayposts become inconsistent as we enter the dunes, some standing as tall and clear as when they were built, thousands of years ago. Others are half buried in the sand. It's been 15 years since anyone has made this crossing and told the tale. 15 years of wind and sand. I'm scared some might be missing entirely, swallowed by the dunes. We find another half-buried post before nightfall. We make camp around its base, still offering some protection, though nothing like the 20 paces full pillars offer. We lay portable ward circles around the animals and our bedrolls for added security, but the wind worries me. Sand blows across the ward plates, threatening to weaken the protections. We take turns on watch, sweeping the wards clean regularly until dawn. But the demons are few this far from civilization. We continue 2 more days, but as the 3rd night approaches, we find ourselves without a waypost at all. Just a wooden pole in the sand where the pillar lay buried, with an arrow pointing the way. To make matters worse, a powerful wind kicks up, blowing sand and grit everywhere. We pace the perimeter of our portable warding circle, but the plates are being covered faster than we can sweep them clean. We try to make music, but Rojva's throat is dry, her voice muffled by her veil. I'm forced to lower my veil entirely to play the pipes, inhaling grit every time I take a breath. Sand gets in the strings and bow of Arik's Kamange. He continues to play, but it fouls what sound isn't drowned by the howl of the wind. Even the protection of our cloaks starts to weaken as blowing sand collects on the threads, making the wards fuzzy and ineffective. And amid the howling wind and our shouts to one another, I hear sand demon cries. My hand goes instinctively for my bow, but I know it's pointless. My hands already shake when I'm aiming at something trying to kill me, and I ain't a good enough shot to account for wind like this. I grip the bone handle of Mam's knife, instead, as I search the blowing sands. Da wrote that sand demons look so much like the dunes, they're near impossible to see in normal vision. I can see their auras with my night eyes, but they've adapted to use the blowing sand to their advantage. The swirling particles in the air reflect the glow, making the shapes vague and diffuse. It's impossible to tell how many there are, or how close. Suddenly, the ward net around us flashes to life, revealing dangerously large gaps in the web where sand has marred the wards. Selin screams, and I turn to see her stumble back, spear knocked from her grasp by the swipe of a clawed arm, as a sand demon attempts to force its way through a hole in the wards in front of her. In a flash, the bow is off my shoulder. I knock and loose, but as I feared, the wind throws off my aim, and the missile flies wide, nearly hitting one of the horses. Selin! I cry, pulling Mam's knife and running her way. I needn't have bothered. Selin balls a fist and swings, her punch striking the demon like a thunderstick. There's a flash on impact, and the demon is knocked back. I don't understand how it's possible until I see the jewelry on her spear hand. A set of 5 silver rings, warded and connected by fine silver chains to a jeweled bracelet around her wrist. Already the demon is shaking off even this, tamping down for another leap. Before it can strike, Selin sweeps clean the weakened ward plates. When the demon leaps, it flattens against a solid ward net and is thrown back. But more sands flying through the air, and the circle is far from secure. Arik stubbornly keeps playing as Selin once again takes up her spear, eyes searching for the next breach. When another demon finds a gap in the wards, Selin is there to meet it, head-on, driving her warded spear down its throat. The wards glow fiercely, and her aura brightens as feedback magic runs up her arm. To the abyss with it! Arik drops his Kamange and picks up his spear and shield as another demon starts probing the wards. He doesn't wait for the calling to find a gap, stabbing it in the shoulder and collapsing it to the ground. Magic rushes into him, and he gives a primal roar that carries on the wind. The next few hours are chaos. Arik and Selen do the fighting, loping about the camp to throw back sand demons seeking gaps in the net. Selen is quiet, focused, but Arik's laughter seems amplified by the din, as frightening as the cries of the demons. I want to help, Arik and Selen, but there ain't much I can do, save get in their way. A demon pierces the ward net near Rojva, and I race to her instead, interposing myself with Mam's knife held high, as if I know how to use it in a fight. Still, the calling must sense the weapon's power, because it pulls up, warily, hissing like a cat as it displays razor-sharp claws and teeth. As with the others, Rojva doesn't need my help. Step aside, cousin. She reaches into her Hora pouch, drawing out a demon tooth the size of my middle finger, tiny wards etched into its surface. She points it at the sand demon, sliding a finger to cover some wards and reveal others. A bolt of lightning leaps from the tooth, striking the demon in the chest and hurling it back into the swirling sands. It's a tough tea to swallow, but I focus instead on the one thing I can do, moving around the camp's perimeter at speed, using a small brush to clear off the ward plates. It helps, but the task seems endless, as the wind continues to howl and more demons are drawn to the storm. Sand demons don't come much bigger than hounds, but I'd rather fight a pack of rabid dogs than a single one of the fast, vicious creatures. With every blow he strikes, Arik's aura grows brighter, and his aggression grows, and long before he looks a bit rabid himself. He stabs a sand demon, and when it does not rise, he turns to see Selen in a fighting stance, spear and shield at the ready to meet the charge of another of the small, muscular beasts. Arik leaps into the demon's path, shoving Selen aside. Where she waited patiently with her shield up, he abandons defense in favor of a devastating thrust of his spear that punches through the demon's armor and into its chest. "Aye, what was that?" Selen cries. Arik ignores her, shouting something incoherent as he stabs the creature again and again. The wards on his spear are hot with magic. All of us stay out of Arik's way after that. He rushes around the circle, whirling his spear through the air to stab demon after demon. The look in his eyes reminds me of Ella Cutter, when the children locked her in the bunker. The wind dies down after a time, and the attacks taper off. But Arik continues to pace the perimeter of the circle like an animal, growling incoherent words to himself. He's rattling my nerves. Selen's aura is hot with stolen magic too, and I can smell her anger. Can't stop thinking about how he shoved me. The word comes out in a growl as she tightens her grip on her spear, and I see where this is going. I'll go talk to him, I say, before things can escalate. It should be me, Rojva says. I can get through to him. Aye, maybe, I say. But he's magic drunk. Seen it before. Get far enough gone, you can't tell friend from foe. My brother would never hurt me, Rojva says. But there is doubt in her scent. Just let me feel him out, I say. Ain't much good in a fight, but I'm great at slipping punches. But I don't go slippery as I approach Arik. Instinctively, I suck in, making my flesh tougher, my bones harder. The effect shrinks me a bit. Might make Arik feel less threatened, or it might make him feel like a cat spotting a barn mouse. You were right, Arik, I say at his back. As he turns, I hold my empty hands, palms up. No one can deny you the black now. Arik stares like he doesn't know me, breathing great gulps of cold night air through his veil. All friends here? Aye? I continue to approach, hands out, wide. His breathing steadies, and I start to relax. But then I take one step too many and enter into his striking zone. Arik gives a shout, slashing with the wide blade at the end of his spear. He's fast, but I'm ready, turning slippery as I quick step out of reach. Arik spins the spear this way and that to stab and club at me, growling all the while. powered by feedback magic and adrenaline, he's got speed to rival mine, and I reckon he's strong enough to arm wrestle olive paper. A single one of his blows could take off my head. But I'm not looking to fight back. So long as I stay slippery and focus only on defense, Arik can't do more than strike a glancing blow that slides right off me. He swings again and again, but I give him no magic to feed off, and slowly his frantic pace begins to drain away some of the excess energy. It's wearing on me too. It's been a long night, and I'm not sure which of us will tire first. "This ain't you, Arik," I huff, barely rolling around a thrust of his spear in time. "It's the magic talking." "Embrace the feeling, brother," Rojva calls, "and let it pass over you. Or have the stones to pick on someone your own size." Selin steps forward, spear and shield at the ready. "And help him, Sel," I say. Arik responds to this new threat with a growl, turning to face Selin. There's a hint of smile on her face as she sets her feet to meet him. "Has everyone gone crazy?" Before Arik can move Selin's way, Rojva steps in front of him, slapping him hard across the face. It's a terrible insult to slap a crazy man. More often than not, a precursor to a duel that will claim at least one life before satisfaction. Shocked, Arik stumbles back, shaking his head. Selin steps in front of me, spear up. "Stay behind me, Da." I drop a hand to Mam's knife, and even Rojva has a demon bone in her hand. Arik squeezes his eyes shut for a long moment, then opens them. Something of his sanity restored as he sees the three of us staring at him. "Fight's over, Arik," I say. "We won." He stares at me a moment, and throws back his head and laughs, thrusting his spear in the air. No one sleeps. Arik and Selin keep watch, as much over each other as the sands. Both remain awash in power and jittery. Arik still hasn't spoken. Selin seems to have a better lid on it, but I wouldn't want to get in an argument with her now. Rojva looks exhausted, her white robes crusted with dust. With Arik out of sorts, I can tell she doesn't know who to trust. I want to help her, but with dawn approaching, I've got problems of my own. With no obelisk shadow to shelter in, I set up Duskrunner's canopy and strap myself into the saddle, carefully covering every inch of myself and putting my cloak's hood up for good measure. I look at my friends sadly. They have no idea what's about to happen, but maybe that's for the best. Shaded and layered, sunrise is bright and hot, the light making my skin itch, but I've gotten used to the feeling. Arik and Selin are not so fortunate. Selin yelps first, as the demon ichor staining her spear and shield and armor smokes and then sparks into flame. She drops her arms and beats at the flame, even as Arik bellows and begins a similar dance. Then the sunlight hits them more fully, burning away the excess magic radiating from their auras, and they scream. It doesn't last long. The worst of it never does, especially when you're caught in the light. Just a hot flash of pain that leaves you breathless and shaken in its wake. Selin and Arik quiet after a bit, and then it's like all our strings are cut. I half doze, listening as the others follow my example. They cover their skin and stiffly feed and water their mounts from our lightening supply. While the horses eat, they saddle them and raise the canopies. I hear sighs of relief as they climb into the saddles, but no one makes any effort to move. I allow myself to drift off completely.
"Aye, Darren."
Selin shakes me awake. The light is blinding as I open my eyes and I hiss, holding up a hand to block the worst of it.
"It was a lot worse at sunrise," Selin says. "Is that what it's like for you every morning?"
I shrug. "Get used to it.
I don't think I could ever get used to being on fire," Selin says.
I agree. "But you make a fuss and folks start whispering you've got demon blood."
Folk are always whispering, Selin says. It's up to you whether to listen. As if it's so easy to shut out whispers when you can hear a butterfly flapping its wings. I glance at the noon sun overhead. Lost the morning, I guess. Lost more than that, Selin says. Can't spot the next waypost. That sits me up straight. I look back to the signpost, but it's bent over in the sand, arrow knocked askew. Can't tell which way it was pointing. The entire landscape looks different after last night's storm. Panic knots my muscles, but I try not to show it. The desert road doesn't run a straight line. If we stray too far off course, we could lose it forever. Without the wayposts to guide us, we could miss Fort Crozier by 100 miles and never know it. I cover up as best I can and climb the tallest dune, using my compass and the sun to aid me as I search the sands for the desert road. I can see for miles, but there is no sign of the next post. One look at my face as I come back down tells the others all they need to know. Anyone remember which way the sign was pointing? That way, Selin points. Near where we dug the fire pit. I squint away the sunlight as I peer in that direction. Sure about that? Selin blows out a breath. Mostly, I think. Are we to trust our lives? To mostly? Rojva asks. You could throw your dice, if you had any. Selin grunts. Rojva glares at her, but Selin is not easily intimidated. Don't see you offering better. I wish I had something to add, but between the weather and the demons, we're all turned around. Arik produces his map, though it doesn't tell us much without the posts to mark the land. Most of it's blank, with vague markings where ancient ruins are supposedly buried. Crazier's to the southeast, I say. Closer to the mountains that feed the oasis. I check my compass, and Selin's guess is as good as any. Can't stay here, I say. So either we turn back.
No.
Selin cuts in. I nod. Then mostly's all we got. The compass and a fuzzy memory may be more precise than wild guesses, Rojva says. But they could still lead us far enough from our goal to miss it entirely in the sands. We don't have supplies to wander the desert until fortune finds our way. Go back if you're scared, Selin says. But I didn't come all this way to turn around because the wind blew a sign over. Need to get moving so we don't lose the day, I say. Want to get as far as we can from here. Corlings always rise in the same area they left to flee the sun. Reckon there'll be a whole mess of them come nightfall. What say you, brother? Rojva looks to Arik. But her brother is staring into the distance, his face euphoric. I'm not even sure he's listening until he whispers a reply.
Let them come,